You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
You're listening to the show aimed at supporting and encouraging Christians who lead. This week, I'm delighted to welcome back Anne-Marie Wilson, the founder of 28 Too Many and the ORCID Project. As we get into the detail of her work, we will be covering areas you might not regard appropriate for children, so you might want to ensure your radio, your speaker is not within earshot. So I'm looking forward to hearing how the work has progressed and what Anne-Marie has been learning about leadership along the way. So welcome back, Anne-Marie.
Thank you so much, Andy. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
I got to know you just at the very start of your ministry. So perhaps you could start by describing what your charity work is concerned with and the need to define what is known as by the acronym or the letters FGM, or sometimes referred letters FGC. So maybe you could explain all that to our listeners.
Of course. Well, I worked a little bit as a volunteer in aid work in Africa, actually at the time in Sudan, in West Darfur, which was a war zone then. And I bumped into a little girl who had a shocking story. So I won't say much more about the traumas of this, but she had been cut, as was part of the harmful traditional practice of FGM. You could find something on our website, the ORCID Project, or on WHO if you want to find more about the details of that. It's actually been going on for 2,000 years, and it was pre-Islam and pre-Christianity. And it's done really as a purity and chastity rite, but it's also, it's got a sort of fairly dark history as to why it was started. But the thing it does is traumatise girls mentally as well as physically, and often leaves them with short and long-term physical disabilities for the rest of their life. So that's really the essence of what it is. As to who we work for and who we are now, I set up 28 Too Many in, or I started working for and starting it in 2000. So I've just got to 25, 26 years of doing this work now, all as a volunteer. And along the way, I met another person who set up the ORCID Project, and they were planting or sort of supporting financially projects in various countries. And then when their founder wanted to move on, we merged our two charities. And the essence of that is all of our research team went over as a group, and we're now a fairly lean organisation between the two of us. We don't have a lot of personnel. We're quite refined and quite streamlined in what we do. But our idea and our sort of raison d'etre is to thinking about enabling us to manage knowledge globally, undertake research and equip those working to end FGM and generate the evidence upon which grants for people like the UN can be given, but also to catalyse and support regional networks and charities. And we are known as really the Google of this sector. And finally, to influence global and regional policies and actions, and also importantly now funding. But we the ownership of the research activities that enable the knowledge base to be owned and updated. It's a bit like a fourth road bridge. Things are always coming in on the side, and we look at the data, we compare like with like, and so we can enable organisations to know that where they're donating to us, they know that every pound of what they give, every dollar of what they give, goes to actually doing the work that we're meant to do.
Some listening, if this is the first time they've heard it, will perhaps find the whole concept abhorrent. I think it's important to say that there are reasons why it's done within the culture. In some cases, as you kind of hinted, it's a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. Happens to women as or to girls as the boys are circumcised. There's a kind of party feel to the whole thing sometimes. Although we find it abhorrent, it has been culturally accepted, and also within the Christian churches it's been practiced.
Yes, that's absolutely right. It is a rite of passage. Sometimes it's done at birth, 6 to 8 days old in various different countries. Sometimes more like puberty, and sometimes just before marriage. But it is always followed with horrors of pain and trauma to a woman's body, and normally with psychological damage as well. And often the girl's organs are totally changed in terms of the basic procedures for a woman's anatomy. And when all of those are interfered with, life cannot go on properly. This is not what any good African husband or Middle Eastern husband would want for his wife, but sometimes they're so horrified by it as well. They will literally abandon their wife, send her back to the parents who don't want her then because they paid a dowry to marry her. And then the girl is left incontinent and smelling and can't really leave the house and has to find a charity that could perhaps help her with surgery to correct her problem. So this is a radical accident that people don't want, because they don't correlate the fact of having this procedure with the implications and the symptoms that happened afterwards. They don't put the two together.
And Anne-Marie, how much do these vary within the African nations? The 28 too many, of course, is the 28 African nations and diaspora where this takes place. But there's other countries around the world also.
Yes, there are. I mean, I think in somewhere like the Arab Emirates, which we would think was quite a westernized middle Arabic country that, you know, just borders on sort of quite a lot of Europe, it's about 41%, but about 80% of them are done under a year. So that's I don't think most people would imagine it to take place there. And similarly in Turkey, where many people from Britain go on their summer holidays, 97% of the Sudanese living in the country will have had FGM, which is medicalized in that context. So it won't be done in so much of a rural setting now, but actually 75% of women there want it to stop, and yet it doesn't. And it happens for all different people groups. So you might have anyone that's gone to Turkey, the Moorish people, the Malay people, Dawoodi Boras, which actually live around the Colombo area, but they're more of the sort of Indian group originally. And all of these groups have come together through trade often, and they carry on the practice. I think that's the thing that people find difficult to understand. So often where people come from one country to another and settle, they abandon their historical roots. These countries, particularly in a Muslim context, are very much held onto. And I worked once in Luton when I was at Bible College and studying, and the people in Luton who were a Bangladeshi Pakistani background, they were holding on to their culture and wearing veils and more formal dress, more covering up attire, because they were grieving the loss of their home culture when they came to Britain to be married and arranged marriage when they were late teenagers. So I think that can perhaps help people understand a little bit why something like this might happen. But it's still, we class it as a harmful practice, although it might have cultural origins. And actually, we would be saying, keep the culture, abandon the harm. I think that's what we would advise for anyone that we talk to about this practice.
So Anne-Marie, each nation's progress will be different towards eradicating this. Have there been any game-changing initiatives or projects that have really generated momentum and helped a nation to understand better and perhaps change their practice?
Kenya has been a really good game-changer, actually, throughout. They are one of the first countries to decide to take an anti-FGM board by the government. So they actually put the president in charge as chair of the anti-FGM board, which I think is very interesting. And that meant it came up very high office and very high clout. So that was one thing they did, and they took it very seriously. They've actually, I think they've had something like 100 prosecutions as well. So they've really moved, actually. They also initiated a helpline, stop line, so that anybody can telephone the number in Kenya. It's 1195. And that's the anti-FGM reporting line, so that girls can can literally, or girls or brothers or of them, could go and ring and get hold of an adult's telephone and say, I need to use your phone just to ring this free phone number. I think that's quite a clever idea as well. Yeah, I mean, another idea might be that catechism has been embraced in Kenya as well, so that instead of the traditional side, they would be using communicating and training the no need for FGM. So there's a sort of an adding in of health practice along the lines as well, so that girls learn all about adult issues like sexual relations as well as their traditional catechism. I thought that was quite useful and novel when I was working there.
And I understand that sometimes this practice is to ward away evil spirits.
Yes, I mean, in Africa, a lot of, as I say, it's pre-Muslim and pre-Christian, goes back over 2,000 years. When Islam or Christianity came in, they sat on top of the traditional practices. That's really what we're talking about. And the original practices didn't disappear. So, for instance, in Tanzania, when I was there, if the coffee prices went down, they would assume that it was the gods that were angry and they would need to sacrifice or have blood on the land. Now, sometimes that could be done with an animal or something such as that, or a piece of a dead meat. But more often than not, there would be occasions where a girl would bleed out and that would appease the gods. Now, we don't really know exactly what's going on behind that, but that's the sort of thing that would probably have its roots in this practice and to ward off spirits from that. We also know in the diaspora, there was an FGM case a couple of years ago, and when the police inspected a certain house where somebody had practiced FGM, it was integrated with witchcraft. And there was in the freezer of the person's property, there were all sorts of slices of like lemon with people's names on it to send sort of a spell on them, really. So it's quite complicated. It's not for the faint-hearted, and it's not easy to eradicate and get into this level of depth. I've been doing this now 25 years, and there's a lot of knowledge I've accumulated, but it is quite something to get your head around because it's so mixed up with so many different aspects.
Anne-Marie, have local churches become more interested in this compared to, say, others in society?
I think they have, but it's still only patchy, Andy. I think it depends on the leadership of the church. As more and more women are getting involved in leadership of churches, they are more open to this. I think they can relate to some of the horrors of the practice. But it is certainly something that I do try and speak at as many churches as possible, and some are more open to it than others. But I think some do. I think when we put a campaign out, or when we put some links out to the book I wrote, for instance, that will touch many people's lives. And Church Mission Society, who I sit under in terms of covering of my ministry this last sort of 15, 20 years, they are quite aware of it and quite supportive of it. But they've seen me journey through from this with just a concept and a wing and a prayer, really. But I think it's incredible that I've gone on so long from strength to strength, really, and managed to do as much as I have. My original dream, my crazy God-given calling, but God, I did hear God say, you will do this, was to profile all the countries in Africa, which are 28, as you mentioned, and also to do a profile of each of the country, which meant going there and researching each of the 28 countries. We then added 28 law reports, so each country had a law report as well, and we've got a model law that any country can adopt to enable them to have anti-FGM law. So that's another thing that we've seen as a radical improvement, is that a number of countries have added in law change, that's Somalia being one, Somalia, Somaliland being one, and also Sudan as well. So the biggest populace of country, landmass-wise and population-wise, has now got a law that actually makes it illegal Now, of course, illegal doesn't mean it stops, but you can't stop it without it becoming illegal. And then, you know, then it's a case of enforcing the law, which is very difficult to do. But there, it's all stepped in the right direction.
Well, that's terrific to hear, Anne-Marie. This all began with you, a nurse. What have been the leadership questions you've had to answer along the way?
Well, as a white woman, I think it makes it quite difficult going into Africa and saying this is what we want to do to change things. You know, it makes it very hard. I studied at All Nations College to do gender and anthropology, development and leadership studies, because I thought I don't want to make this worse than it was when I met it, because I think that would be a terrible place to leave. We're meant to leave a better legacy than we found. So I think for me, it's convincing myself that I have the right to speak into this, really, and particularly the right to speak into it when it's really a bit of a taboo subject. I've recently spent a month or so in South America, and we know it's in some of the countries there. And I've also spent time in the Middle East, as well as we've been profiling those two areas of late. And it's not cultural for women to talk to men, and women are, interestingly, almost entirely out of sight. So when I went to Turkey in the back end of the year, I could stand and talk with men for a number of hours about this stuff, but all the women were at home and fully dressed and covered up. But it made it very difficult to talk to the women. I could talk to the men, but it's not culturally very normal for a woman from abroad to be talking to them. So actually being a psychologist, it would enable me to open doors that might not have been available before.
I mean, it's fantastic that you've been able to do what you've done over this long period of time without throwing in the towel and being true to the vision that God's given you. So bless you. What would you say to the Anne-Marie of 2010?
Yes, that's a good question. I was thinking about that a little while ago, about what would I say now as we're coming up to 2020, 2030. I think I would say that think really big. My first vision really was to profile 28 countries across Africa and to do a 10% reduction in 10 countries in 10 years, so 10, 10, 10. We actually did it in 5 years or 5 or 6 years. So the interesting thing is the goal has become so much bigger than it even was. And I thought big, and CMS and others thought I thought it was really big, my home church as well. But actually, I think it is that audacious, big, hairy goals, really, that the one I'm now aiming for is really my goal that was so big, I don't think I even voiced it to start with, of seeing in my lifetime the global eradication of FGM. We will have, in the next couple of years, by 27, 28, have profiled all of the EU, the US, the UK, Asia, the Middle East, South America, everywhere I wanted and beyond will have been profiled. And that means there is a sort of template laid down. And it means that when there are funding issues happening, people don't give to the wrong regions. I know with when I worked in Nigeria a few years ago, that people's expectation were that you would give to the rural, uneducated, poor Muslim communities. And it's actually the Christian, rich, urban, educated populations that need the initiatives. So things are often not what they seem, which is why you need research. But there is very little funding given to research because it doesn't look like it's doing anything. But if you're providing a Google-like service for free to the world, you are actually providing a pretty incredible service. And actually, this is what has enabled us to start partnering with the UN and others. I managed to get the UN to change its statutes and actually put FGM in the statute books by actually standing up and saying, this is what I want here. And that's just me having the, I suppose it's almost the cheek and the God's empowerment to go there and say, I will make a difference. But I didn't really know it would actually happen. So I think I would say to other people younger than me, think really big and don't be afraid to start doing something, even if you don't know exactly what it'll end up as. And also don't be afraid to make mistakes. I constantly make them in all the work I do. I also work as a chaplain now, end of life, and as a leader in my church. and I would like to be ordained, given half a chance, so that I can carry on using all this cross-cultural studies and knowledge gained over the last sort of 25 plus years that we actually need in our home churches now. We are gone of the days where we were just a sort of white country in the UK. We're not at all. And I've gained so much, so many skills and experience. I would like that to be used in the church setting now as well as just in FGM. But this will always be on my heart. The job is continuous. So I think it's really a case of for people to get behind it. I've got a book out that I wrote in 2019, which is really the first 20 years of my story. And I think that would, the reason for writing that was to say to people, whatever you have in your heart or your God-given quiet prayers, have the nerve and just go and try it. And God will get on side with you. And if God's with you, it will happen anyway. So I think that would be my view to the younger me or the younger person out there listening, to get the nerve to just, what's the worst can happen? If it doesn't work, you go and do something else. But I would say most things probably do work. And this is how you change a world for better.
Well, that's a lovely attitude, Emery. And obviously, the very nature of the thing you're doing, preventing something, there'll be many people who benefit who won't know that they've benefited because someone stopped something that you've helped to stop.
Yes, exactly.
And that's very precious. That's very precious. And only the Lord looking down knows the many tens of thousands that have been blessed and helped from your work. Are there any particular nations, countries that you've been really pleased to see the changes statistically?
I think me for Sudan, having worked in Sudan and met the little girl there who was cut and raped and had a little girl from the product of that, that was where it all started for me. So I'm really pleased that we managed to pass a law to stop it in Sudan, and that the little girl I met, who would now be a grandma, her granddaughter will be safe from having FGM because it's banned in the country. All that we now have to do is enforce that law. And to have put a law down in every country in Africa to stop it, I think is really way beyond my skill set, really. And I think that's something that actually I couldn't have done if God hadn't got on board and we hadn't got people investing in us, I suppose, really, to have faith in us and to help catalyze this global movement. The idea of this is to actually now, the other thing that we've done in the last few years is I wanted to set up networks across each of the sort of continents, really. And we now have a network in each of them. We have one in Africa, one in Asia, one in Europe, and one in the sort of Middle East. And actually, they're all run by their own country people. So I think that's also quite an achievement. That would be another leadership point I would make, that don't keep things to yourself, pass them on, give them out, and younger people will stand on our shoulders as founders and go on further. I also see a couple of my godchildren have gone on to be medics, and I think it's because of the shadowing work they did with me to get an idea of what has happened. So I would say the other thing as a leader would be to coach and mentor and give your skills and knowledge away to the next generation so they can carry on pioneering and realizing big audacious goals that perhaps our generation was quite a pioneering generation, but the next ones need to see that that actually can be a really powerful way to go as well.
Well, thank you. That's terrific. And Anne-Marie, just as we close, remind us of the website where people can get more information, and also of your book and how people can get a copy.
Yes, of course. Yes. So the website that I'm supported under, and it's I've been supported the last 25 years by people giving. So I would really appreciate that, especially since my funding got cut this last year to half its rate because not enough churches were carrying on funding me. So that would just be, if you put into the Google search Church Mission Society / Anne-Marie Wilson, AnnMarieWilson, or just go on the Church Mission Society's website and find partners to follow. And my book is called Simply Overcoming My Fight Against FGM, and that's under my name, Dr. Anne-Marie Wilson. And that's an easy, fairly low-cost paperback, really. And all the funds go to this work. I just I buy them at the cost at cost price, and then any profits go into directly into the profit into the work we do. So that would really help me on my journey as well. And then just be encouraging, really. If anyone wants to get in touch, they can easily find me on the internet or just on the ORCID site and get in touch. And we'd love to have people getting involved, and we can always find something for people to do.
Well, it's been terrific to kind of watch your journey from almost from the very start, and thrilling to hear all that God's doing. And one day in eternity, you'll understand and know what God has done through you. So bless you. Thank you.
Andy, thank you so much. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Anne Marie Wilson. Do go to Church Mission Society website and find out more, and it may be good to ask God if you should be supporting her work. Do buy her book on Amazon, Overcoming My Fight Against FGM. Anne Marie Wilson, that's A-N-Marie Wilson. And if God has given you a vision for change that's small or large in your world or someone else's, then may she be an inspiration, and may God the grace and the strength to see it through. This is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.